Time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end? And
WHFR, Dearborn. Okay, we'll be connecting with the new WHFR Journal briefly. We'll continue now with some more Lionel Hampton and his album from Mostly Ballads.
Thank you.
And then with Lionel Hampton, with we started off with "It Might as Well Be It Might as Well Be Spring," and then followed up by "I Know Why and So Do You." And this is big extension of Big Band Broadway and Beyond, and we're waiting for the call in from our the new WHFR Journal from the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. In the meantime, we're going to listen to some music from Cab Calloway by a group called Big Band Voodoo Daddy, and the music of Cab Calloway. And we'll start off with the song "Come On With the Come On."
Come on, swing with the jive, brother. Come on, swing with the jive, brother. Yeah, now come on, come on, come on with the jump in the jive, brother. You gotta jump with the jive, brother. You gotta jump with the jive, brother. Yeah, now come on, come on, come on with the come on. Bit bam, bit it, do dilly dance it. See what I'm a bit with sign. See bam, bit it with sign. Now zoom, see what the body's sign. Now jive, brother. You gotta rock with the jive, brother. You gotta rock with the jive, brother. Yeah, but come on, come on, come on with the come on.
Okay, we finally got in touch with their the new WHFR Journal, and Jay is there. Jay?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Joe. Okay, yes, we had some technical difficulties, but that's broadcasting, non-commercial broadcasting in the Dearborn area. It's WHFR Dearborn. This is the new WHFR Journal, and today we have a special guest with us, and George Duraney is right here at our table enjoying the sun and fun of the Dearborn Artists and Farmers Market. So today, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Great to be here in beautiful downtown West Dearborn, and happy to be with you for another segment.
Well, we're great to, it's always great to have you here and talking about what's happening up in the legislature in Lansing. Although a lot of people feel that not much is happening, and it must be kind of frustrating to be a Democrat, in fact, these days in Lansing, or maybe for the last 5 years you've been there.
Well, yeah, I've been there 4.5 years now, and of course we've been in the minority since day one, not only in the House, but in the Senate, and of course the governor's seat, and Secretary of State, and Attorney General's office has all been pretty much opposite of our views, so it's been a little frustrating getting our ideas through.
Yeah, specifically, right at the beginning, what about the roads? There are a number of bills that I know have been passed through the House already from a Representative Cotter. Is that the group that that the Detroit News about a month ago, when they first saw these, said they're crazy. They won't work in the long run. But I think pretty much all of those, and it's not one bill. It's broken down into like 8 or 9 different ones. What do you think the future is of those bills that the Detroit News said are kind of crazy? And what's the problem with them as you see it? If I mean, the Detroit News had their reasons, but how do you see what's happened so far?
Well, what's happened so far is the package, like you said, about 8 to 10 bills that are in the package, pretty much passed on party lines in the House, as you could probably guess. The one thing that I think everybody voted in favor of was that we needed better warranties for our roads. That was part of that package. Very easy for everybody to get on board that one. But a lot of the other things that were in the bills, especially eliminating the earned income tax credit, was just crazy talk. And when we were talking about passing Proposal 1, they were going to increase the earned income tax credit, as you remember, from 6% back up to the 20% it was before Governor Snyder was elected. When he got there, he lowered it to 6, and they said, okay, if this bill passes, we'll bring it back up to 20%. These are the working poor. These are not people that are not working. These are people that are working but are pretty much at the poverty level. They get a little bit of extra money from the state at the end of the year when they turn in their income tax. And as far as Dearborn's concerned, we're looking at roughly 30,000 people that use the earned income tax credit to get a couple $200, $300, $400 at the end of the year that they can put back into the economy, pay bills, pay their house payment, whatever it is. And so eliminating that, in our view, as Democrats, was totally ridiculous. And so we couldn't support the package basically based on that one thing. But there's also other problems with the bill, because it assumes that we're going to have money in the general fund every year to use toward the roads. This year we happen to have a surplus, $300 to $400, whatever you want to believe, $1 million for the roads. But that's this year. What's going to happen next year, 2 years from now, 7 years from now? It's not sustainable. So we're going to go to that bill is going to go to the Senate. The Senate's going to be working on it this summer and coming up with their own version, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and in terms of the numbers, too, it doesn't make sense to me. For example, basically the Republican proposals that are already passed the House are no new taxes.
Exactly. They will not vote for new taxes, especially now, and which makes one think that any road bill may be dead on arrival, because if it doesn't include any kind of tax revenue generated, then it's not going to generate enough money that the governor wants to see, the $1.2 billion he expects to have every year for the next 10 years.
And that $1.2 billion, I understand, which is a figure from several years back that he first introduced, because the roads and bridges are in worse condition now, it's actually more realistically about $1.8 billion, just to catch up to a maintenance sort of level when it might be less, or 10 years. So they won't be able to find enough money to really fix the roads and the bridges in the way that they need to be fixed. And it's going to take a 10-year process to get them back into shape again. Not good for tourism and other things. But I don't understand, and can you make this argument to any Republicans? I thought Republicans might be in favor of a user fee. Isn't that what, for example, a gas tax would be? What, that they see that as a tax on everybody, even though it's only people that use gasoline and diesel fuel.
Right. That's how they view it. And now that the Republican Party's basically turned a little bit more right than it had been even before I got there, it makes it even tougher. And they're all up for a lot of the folks that are running for rep will be soon, in a couple years, running for Senate. And they're going to be competing against each other. So when that happens, then nobody wants to be the first one to say, okay, I'm in to raise taxes, because then the other opponent could use it against them. So they're afraid of raising taxes.
Let's take a person at the table interview here, Jenna Conroy, my colleague, the WHR news director. How do you feel about paying more gas taxes, John? You're a driver. You drive around a lot. You think that's a fair approach, maybe among others, for funding the roads? You get able to say your opinion here. And, you know, folks, all opinions on this show are not necessarily those of anyone else at Henry Ford College.
Thank you, Jay. Some tax is unavoidable, I believe. But I've come from the East Coast where we had tolls on highways. And they seem to be an effective way of gathering money together. And there's tolls in Indiana as well. What's the possibility of tolls in Michigan, George?
Well, the reason why people feel that tolls don't work is because Michigan is a peninsular state. And that Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, that's a drive-through state. So a lot of, to get to one point or the other, you have to go through those states. You're right.
No other choice.
And so the majority of people that pay those tolls are people that don't live in those states. But if we had the same kind of toll tax here in Michigan, only Michiganers, or pretty much only Michiganers, would be paying that tax. And for that reason, a lot of people don't favor tolls in Michigan.
Well, but I know the Detroit News pointed out, and they're usually a very Republican-oriented conservative journal, but in the future of transportation over the next 10 years, I mean, hopefully there'll be more fuel-efficient cars on the road, which even if there was a gas tax, that's going to be declining in its revenue, even if there's an increase now, unless you keep increasing it massive amounts. But we want people to get more fuel-efficient cars, so a higher gas tax would encourage some people to get a more fuel-efficient car, or maybe make a choice of a hybrid or an electric car. I know that one of the proposals that was passed the House, well, correct me if I'm wrong, you're the expert here, also suggested higher registration fees for cars. Yeah. And a change in the taxes on diesel and gas fuel so that they pay the same.
Yeah, they would be equal. Right now it's 19 cents on regular gas and 15 cents on diesel. So it would make it a diesel parity. So they would both be paying the same 19 cents. And registration fees for hybrids or electric cars, those registration fees would be, I think the figure they used was $100 more, because they wouldn't be necessarily using, especially the electric cars wouldn't be using any gas at all, but they're still using the roads. So the registration fees would go up for those vehicles. Now, a lot of people think that that's unfair, too. Look, I've made the investment to buy an expensive electric car to save the earth, you know, and you're charging me more money because I'm being economically and environmentally sound. So a lot of people didn't like that either, but it passed.
Okay. Well, it seems to me, you know, I was thinking about this, a gas tax, even a substantial one, and we haven't had a gas tax increase in Michigan for what, 20 years almost?
Yeah, in the mid-90s, I think, yeah.
That it's about time to sort of go with prices for everything, you know. So I don't think people will be so sad about that. And a lot of people, unfortunately, don't realize that even $4 a gallon, I mean, gas is, what, about $3.30 a gallon now for regular maybe?
I just pay $2.80. Yeah, $2.80 I just pay.
Well, that's probably going to go up if you know, there's limited supplies. It'll kick back in eventually, I think. But for $4, folks, that's a fancy coffee drink these days, you know? And that's a gallon of gas. And in a fuel-efficient car, it'll take you 19 or 20 miles. It's just a coffee. Make coffee at home, people, you know? I think you can afford a gas tax pretty easily. And it makes so much sense that I thought it used to be a Republican sort of idea. And it's really just an idea of any the user fee is very Democratic, in fact, too, right?
There is, yeah. I mean, because people are worried about being a regressive tax. You know, the poor, it's a higher percentage of their income has to go toward fuel than somebody making a lot of money. But any tax is a regressive tax, right?
But then they shouldn't get rid of the earned income tax, which would give them that rebate the next year, of course. For that extra money they had to put out for maybe additional gas taxes. But I really don't think, unless you're driving, I don't know, John, what do you drive each day, 100 miles or more?
I drive about 60.
I thought so. He's down in Gros Isle, and he comes back and forth. Thank you very much. But he tries to get to all the major events and activities. And you know, so if you're driving maybe 100 miles a day, what is that for you, 5 gallons? 6 gallons? Okay. And what sort of gas tax has it been estimated what would be needed, even though it hasn't been approved? How much more gas tax would it take?
Roughly, they're talking 10 cents a gallon. The average person drives about, well, they use about 500 gallons of gas a year, 500 gallons. So if we went up 10 cents a gallon, that's $50 more in gas tax in a year, in a calendar year. That's what you're talking about.
Folks, compared to a small millage increase for your schools or whatever, it's so little. I mean, an extra $50 a year, and that would cover the governor's need of $1.2 billion even for the 10 years.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what was in Proposal 1. That's what would have happened in Proposal 1. Other, and then plus the other sales tax to cover other things other than the gas tax. But that was the plan. That was part of the Proposal 1 plan, that your gas tax would go up roughly 10 cents a gallon.
Okay. That sales tax. Now, I think you were a supporter of that, as was the governor, right?
Yeah.
That proposal that went down.
I was in favor of it because I was worried about what was going to happen if we didn't get that. It was going to be much worse, including I knew the earned income tax credit was in jeopardy, and to me that was a big issue.
Now, we see around Dearborn a little bit. I mean, they're patching some roads, and they fixed a bridge over the Rouge River that leads to the college, I know.
Yeah.
But that's really not the construction. That's just the usual couple hundred of million that they usually always have, and just fixing the worst priorities. John Conroy, you were mentioning that they're not going to fix any roads or bridges at Grosseo.
That's true, Jay. They told us that we are much lower on any kind of priority list than any other of the big cities in the area.
Are your roads in good shape?
And no, the roads are not in good shape. And there's even talk about people maybe asking Grosseo to become a city instead of a township, so we have a higher chance of getting roads repaired. Higher priority, yes.
Well, I don't know. Would you describe their Grosseo roads as in need of repair?
Most assuredly, and especially the two. One, we have an East River Road and a West River Road that are the edges of each side of the island that are always in need of repair and are always going on the list for our own DPW. Yes. So we have quite a bit of damage that hasn't been fixed.
Yeah. Now, that's not state money that would come there. You're talking to Wayne County. But if the gas tax raises more, if there was a gas tax increase, that is that does, pardon the expression, trickle down to the Queen County and to the local cities too. Right?
Yeah, and Dearborn, we're looking, it would be about $1.5 million to work on Dearborn roads. I think the county number was like $13 million more for them to work with if we had the gas tax, similar to what was in Proposal 1.
Of course, you know, Wayne County is in some big financial trouble recently, and it looks like there's going to be a special assessment, that's what I call it, that people have to pay to make up for some other fund that they didn't, retirement fund. Yes. Thank you, George. Pension fund. Yes. Well, we know about those pension funds. I wanted to bring up,
Wayne County has even made sounds about not wanting to support the bridge, which is currently the free bridge to Grosseo, to possibly asking us to maintain that as well. And that seems to be something we would really be having a lot of trouble to handle.
A couple of studies just came out, George, and I know, explain to me, why is it that the House of Representatives is on vacation right now?
Well, we're never on vacation.
I mean, the Senate is in session, as you mentioned.
Well, they scheduled some days for July and August. I don't believe they're in session as we speak today, but I know they've scheduled session days for July and August, mainly to take care of the roads issue, because the budget has been passed. Traditionally, legislators have worked through the summer to get the budget done, but ever since we've had the new governor, the budget has been completed in the first or second week of June, to give us more time to spend in our districts during July and August with our constituents. And so that's how we spend our time in July and August.
And more time with constituents. Of course, you just came yourself from your usual monthly meeting over at the Dearborn's Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. Always got to get the full name out there. But you're here at the market today. You're going to be trying to catch other places, other events around town.
As a matter of fact, last night I was at Dearborn Democratic Club meeting, And then there was a meeting at Salina School a couple days ago regarding AK Steel and the consent judgment from the Department of Justice that said that they were in violation of some emissions and they have to pay out $1.4 million in fines. So it's a consent that was passed down by, like I said, the Department of Justice, but it has a venting period where residents and people can talk about it. And if we disagree, then they can rescind that.
Okay, as long as you brought that up, I read that AK Steel, though, as part of the idea of buying out the plant from Severstal, was agreeing to pay for the violations that Severstal had, to pay the fines. And I don't know how the fine, paying a fine, helps the health of all the people that suffered over all those years, which I just realized when that story came out, how really serious and long-lived that pollution was from the Severstal operation. So what you just mentioned, though, is that that's an additional operating problem since AK Steel took over?
No, actually, in fact, since AK Steel has been there for 9 months and the DEQ was there, they said that there has been no violations reported since they've taken over 9 months ago. So AK Steel is committed to correct the problems that's ever so. So this agreement would cover the things in the past, not necessarily things in the future, but things that have happened in the past before they were even there.
Well, I mentioned that I have some friends, some former WHFR alumni, in fact, who were working over at Severstal, and they were very concerned about their jobs. And apparently AK made agreement to hire them all back in similar positions or take care of them one way or the other. And that was an extremely friendly way to, usually when people take over a company, they sort of cut expenses to the bone and often sacrifice a lot of workers. So hopefully they're a good member of the community and will continue to be.
I think we're off to a good start with them. And part of this agreement, actually it wasn't part of the agreement, but AK still said on their own what they were going to do for the schools that were nearby there, Salina Elementary and middle school. They're going to put new filtration systems in the schools. So while the students are in the classroom, they'll have, I don't know what you call them, except that they're super sensitive filtration systems at a cost of about $350,000 that AK Steel is going to put in the schools. And this was something that they're doing on their own over and above what the fine was.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal live at Dearborn's Farmers and Artist Market here in West Dearborn. You hear some background music from Visual Ronin Media. And if you're catching that, they had some ABBA on earlier, which is really great. But we're talking to Representative George Duraney, a representative from 15th District here in mostly Dearborn area. That's the 15th District, who is our current representative to Lansing, Michigan. I have to switch to the question, to a couple of studies that came out this week. One is just a comment about funding for higher education. And the study just came out on MLive a couple of days ago. I'll let you look at there. That the Kalamazoo Promise, I know you've heard about that before. The study has shown that the students who get those scholarships when they graduate from high school in Kalamazoo and they go on to college, they have a 30% better chance of graduating. That is, getting to the degree, which really is what counts a lot on employment, and the economic effect and benefit of having those graduates have that kind of success. Does this have any, it doesn't, again, does it fall on deaf ears let's say, Republicans in the legislature, that maybe additional funding of higher ed could have that consequence, or a different kind of scholarship program? I mean, I know the Kalamazoo program doesn't cost the state of Michigan a penny because they had a rich donor who started it, and I guess they've got other companies that have contributed too. But what a success story now. I think it's 10 years. So what about higher ed funding? I know we had a little bit more this year, perhaps, but it's still below 2005 levels, I understand.
Right. Well, it's below, I mean, when the governor took over in 2010, there was a 15%, if you remember, 15% cut for higher education funding. So over the course of the past 3 or 4 years, we've gotten some of that back, but we are in such a deep hole to begin with it's going to take many more years for us to get to back to where we were in 2010. And a 1% increase, I think. 1 or 1.5% increase this year for higher ed.
And people wonder why there are some universities that have raised their tuition 8% this year, and they even say, well, to heck with whatever penalty the state's going to give us. We got to have this money. Their penalty is a lot less than the money we can raise by raising tuition, which means if the penalty is less, it means the funding is even worse off, too. I mean, overall.
Yeah, a lot of universities have given up the $1 million or $2 million extra that they're going to get because they know they need more than $1 or $2 million to raise tuitions to make $3 or $4 or $5 million. And, okay, you keep your $1 or $2 million because we don't need it.
Well, I know it's a big question, but, you know, a couple of people running for president, well, mainly Bernie Sanders from Vermont on the Democratic side, you know, they've talked about the value to our society of having free tuition for higher education. And I'm sure it's for those that qualify, of course, for it. But it would have a tremendous impact. Are these ideas just too darn big? I know in the legislature, I get reports on my cell phone, even George, Vote Spotter and some other apps that tell me how you're voting and what's going up there. And a couple of the bills that passed are sort of like tweaking, improving, but just slightly improving things that are already going on.
Right.
Is there no hope for any big ideas like in education funding?
Well, speaking about, you know, big ideas, we had a big idea from a former Senate Minority Leader Gretchen Whitmer that proposed the Kalamazoo Promise statewide, and of course the Republicans, you know, laughed all on top of that. So they weren't interested in moving anything like that. They thought that if you were deserving to go to college, then fine, but not everybody deserves a free ride to go to college. I don't know what the reasoning was there. But I must say, in this last school bill package that we passed, Democrats were on board. And some Democrats, for the very first time, voted for the school board package because they saw some encouraging things, mainly because when the governor first announced what they wanted to do in April, we disagreed with a lot of their points. And we stated, we will vote only if these things happen. And four or five things actually did happen that got Democrats to vote for the education package. So I'm happy to say that they're moving closer to our direction. Any big ideas, though, I think we're far away from any big ideas really materializing.
Well, the point that was made in the report about Kalamazoo Promise this week is having that scholarship money each semester being offered to you if you're successful in staying in college is a great motivation to try harder. You can continue in college because that money will be there. You just have to do the work, you know, to continue. So I would hope something could improve in that area, but it takes some big ideas and big planning and rethinking of what higher ed is all about here. Here's the other report I had. I'm really full of paper here. Luckily, the wind's not too bad. Bridge Magazine, which is not so much a magazine, but an online source of from the Center for Michigan, sort of a journalism exercise, which is doing a great job in Lansing. They picked up a report from Public Sector Consultants, and maybe you've seen it. They're a public policy firm out of Lansing, of all places. And their conclusion is that tight budgets are very likely stunting learning in Michigan classrooms, and there are steps that can help. And we can't become a top 10 state without that help. And at the end, they start pointing out things that they think could help. And several are the school funding formula, fair and strong teacher evaluation. What happened with teacher evaluation? There was some bill that tried to be passed. I think it sort of stalled or it's got hung up somewhere. I'm not sure if it would have been a good bill or not, in fact.
Well, it was a bipartisan bill, and the representative that had that, Margaret O'Brien, is now a senator, and so she was pushing it with our Democratic from Ann Arbor, Adam Zemke. And so it was a bipartisan bill that I think it was a good compromise, and it got most people on board. It died in the House, but Margaret is determined to get that resurrected this fall in the Senate because, again, it was her bill. and she thinks she can make some headway with it there.
So who would do the evaluation in terms of that bill then? Not the State Board of Ed. Would it go to the one of the economic authorities, I mean the education authorities that are out there?
You know what? I'm not exactly sure what the formula was for who was going to do the evaluations, because there was a compromise between, because the MEA actually was on board with this too, because they thought it was a good idea. So before they weren't. So to get the MEA involved was very important.
As a teacher myself, I have to say, I don't think any good teacher is worried about evaluations. We welcome them. But of course, it's very hard to be a good teacher with limited resources and overcrowded classrooms. My daughter, always mention her, but she's just an example of many teachers. She teaches full-time in Southfield Public Schools, has for about 15 years now, and in her middle school, she has over 35 students in every class, every hour. And then there's no special ed teachers left. I mean, not even part-time. And so almost a fourth of her classroom are mainstreamed students who have really serious problems, learning disabilities.
And I think one of the good things that has happened, I think, in education is not what we've done as a legislature, but what's happening starting July 1st. Do you know what I'm talking about? Starting July 1st, the new superintendent of public schools for our state is Brian Wispin, who has been the superintendent here in Dearborn for years.
Yes, and we congratulate him on that position. But does the Board of Ed really have any power or significance these days? I mean, they're voted into office by the Democrats, but what significant influence can they have in the legislature?
Well, being the superintendent, I think he'd have a little bit more influence than board members would. And I was at a meeting that when he met the education committees in the House and the Senate, and they were asking him a lot of tough questions, and he was talking about teacher evaluation, talked about having more teachers for students with special needs. He's all open to those ideas. And I think he asked me after the interview or after the conference, the committee, how he did. And I said, I thought you did great, because I think both parties recognize that they have somebody they can work with, because Brian's going to tell it the way it is. He's very honest and open. And I think that's what they're looking for, somebody that can tell them the straight answers and knows his business, because he's been a superintendent. He's been a lobbyist for schools. He's well-versed in the politics of Lansing. And I think both parties respect his ability to move the state forward in education.
He seems to be a good communicator, a good leader, and that's what I think is needed. And because pretty much as I see it, the Board of Ed superintendent is just it's a talking point. It's certainly you do get press whenever you have a statement you want to make, but he certainly is the kind of person I think that can work with Democrats and Republicans. In fact, I heard a rumor that he was a Republican himself, but wow, he's all for teachers. He doesn't want to belittle them. So here's a person that can work on the problems, and it doesn't matter what political affiliation. There's answers that are going to work or that should be tried, and there's some that don't. Should mention, as long as we brought up the superintendent of the state of Michigan, being Brian Wiston from Dearborn, Dr. Glenn Malico. Is it Malico or Malico?
Malico.
Okay, that's what John Conroy told me, but I didn't believe him. Malico has been selected as new superintendent of Dearborn Public Schools, taking over July 1st. Malico is 42 years old, 20 years in Dearborn, started as a substitute teacher at Oakman Elementary. He's been assistant principal at Salina. He later became principal there when it went to a 4-8 building, and then 2 years principal at Duval. So he's been around the district. More recently, he was executive director of staff and student services. So, of course, before that, human resources director. So I think we're in good stead with him. He knows the district already. He knows Wisden's leadership and the initiatives there. So that would be good. Well, what about, okay, not letting you off the hook yet. In the bridge report, there's some other suggestions, though. And the breeze here, which is lovely at the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market here, changing the school funding formula, even for colleges. I should have brought it up when we're talking about college. Why can't it just be a per pupil amount? You know, college isn't done that way. It used to be years ago, but it's just sort of based on what you got the year before, and that doesn't really take into account how many students you have. How does that make sense?
Yeah, I would agree that if we did it the same way that we fund K through 12, it would make a lot more sense. And it wasn't to say 35 states do it that way already. So we should be learning from those that have done it, in my view, the correct way.
And there seems to be a big disparity, even for pupil funding by the state of Michigan, that some four-year schools, and I don't think, I don't have the printout here of that, but a few of them seem to be getting almost twice the amount of money. They're institutions of higher learning. I guess you could say some of them know how to do it more efficiently, don't need as much money. But it seems like a basic per pupil allowance should be the basic criteria. Maybe research institutions need more money for their research facilities. I really don't know. It's certainly much too hard for a large institution to be evaluated from year to year by legislators who are term limited, and even your staff. I mean, what kind of people can delve into this? So it's a real challenge. Let's back up here. So it's getting to kids early in the process.
And the governor's been very good with the Head Start program and getting kids in school at a younger age, from preschool on, and putting more money into that. Because, you know, you can look at all the national and international studies that show that kids that that are in school at 4 and 5 and 6 years old, early on, they learn the most. Their brains expand the most at that time, and they have the energy to learn at that age, and they learn more at that age. So if we wait until they're 6 or 7 or 8 to really delve into reading, arithmetic, and everything else, sometimes it's too late. Sometimes it's too late. And those are international studies that show that. So the governor realizes that and has spent a lot of time and energy and now money to help get kids into preschool.
Well, I know your style of leadership and your record in Lansing is you'll try to work with everybody if they'll give a chance to listen to you, if they'll give you a chance to talk to them. I know you were that way. You're not on the education committee now. You're on agriculture.
Agriculture, regulatory reform, and I'm still the minority vice chairman of health policy. Yeah.
And luckily we still have a health policy, and we still have the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act still in place, and so Michigan won't be upset at all in the additional insurance coverage that we have now that we didn't have a couple years ago, so that's good. On certain initiatives that are bigger ideas, I'm always into bigger ideas, and I know that kind of change comes the hardest. But what is there any thought by the Democratic Party, and I'm asking for your opinion, not an actual factual statement, because who can know what's going on really very much there. But what about supporting certain petition drives to get big ideas in place for 2016. Is the Democratic Party thinking maybe about doing that? I mean, if legislation can't work, but we know some of these issues, a majority of Michiganders are in favor of them. So, but the issue is, how do you get on the ballot? Has a political party like the Democrats or anybody talking about maybe trying to somehow lend support to petition drives?
Yeah, I think there has been talk of that. I mean, as you probably know, we may have a new leader in the Democratic Party very soon in the state of Michigan.
Who is that, George?
Well, Lon Johnson he's our current Democratic leader for the state of Michigan, and he's going to be running for Congress in the first district. And the person taking over will be our current state representative from Grand Rapids, Brandon Dillon. Now, whether he has to leave his current position, become the leader of the Michigan Democratic Party is still unclear. We don't know. But I think Brandon is a very progressive guy, and I work very well with him. But he's also a guy that has worked across the aisle, maybe more so than some others have in the past. So I think getting an initiative, a ballot initiative, may be an option for us. But I think Brandon First is going to really try to work with Republicans in a bipartisan way to see what we can get done.
Well, I'm not sure what sort of head start time you need, but I know there's already two initiatives that have been approved. Their petitions have been approved for being circulated that have to do with marijuana, yeah, legalization of marijuana in Michigan. I'm not sure the differences between the two, but they're already getting started now to try to have enough time to get the signatures to get on the 2016 ballot, I understand.
Yeah.
I think it takes a long time to get the signature.
There may be some insurance reform also that might be on the ballot as well. We're thinking about doing a petition drive for that too. So those are two big issues. And the marijuana issue, I'm not sure how that's going to resonate statewide. I think it's resonating very well here in the Metro Detroit, Ann Arbor area, but I'm not sure how that's going to resonate statewide, but we'll find out.
Should be a majority rule, though, right?
Yes, exactly.
Well, I think it Colorado and Washington State that have gone that far, and it's been a few years now. I think we can see how things are going, and we can fine-tune something here, depending on how these different proposals. I'm just saying, and I know Republicans would see it as an end run if the Democratic Party all of a sudden said, we're just going to vote no, but we're going to put all our support into writing ballot proposals that the public can bring to the ballot. I know that's not the way things are done, but it must be frustrating.
We've seen that done before where we've brought ballot proposals. When was that, 2 or 3 years ago? There were 6 or 7 different ballot proposals that were out, and the Republicans did an end run on a lot of those to make sure that they couldn't happen. And so you're a little bit leery about doing that too sometimes.
And I've heard that sometimes that if you have too many ballot proposals, even if they're all good, they might go down. Although a couple of years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I was in Austin, Texas, and they had 5 requests for funding for the city of Austin, 5 separate ballot proposals that would institute new programs or make new investments. And each one would cost the taxpayers money. It was 8. And they all passed. It was for education. It was for health care. Now, of course, Austin, pretty much full employment.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of business there and more coming in all the time. So I guess if you're fully employed, you're not too worried about paying a little more money out for things that are good for everybody.
Yeah. Well, and the point is having the people vote for themselves without letting us decide for them. A lot of people like that idea. Even when Proposal 1 went down in such a manner that it did, people that were talking to me said, we appreciate the opportunity to tell you what we want, you know, one-on-one, black and white, so you know exactly where we're coming from. And so I think that's important to have that exercise.
If gerrymandering wasn't the way it is in Michigan right now, which clearly favors the Republicans to get reelected, then I think the people that were upset over that ballot proposal coming the way it did, a lot of people just wanted the legislature to do it, take care of it, you know, as our elected representatives. It seemed like passing the buck back to the people. They're kind of mad about that. But in fact, and you say, well, then they can vote out those people. Well, they can't vote them out if it's sort of gerrymandered to favor the people that do vote most, which is Republicans. And this, again, it was gerrymandered, folks, by computers that analyze the districts and the voting patterns and would split up cities and down the middle of roads and alleyways to make sure that even though, as everybody says, a majority of voters in Michigan basically are Democrats. I mean, there's independents too. But look at the Board of Education that are voted on statewide. And is it 5 out of 7 are Democrats?
I think 6 out of 7 are Democrats. 6 out of 7. Yeah.
And that just shows that sort of the Democratic voters in Michigan, and I know we have a Republican governor, and that was voted statewide too. But all things aside, the gerrymandering is a mess. There's no way to solve that short term.
I don't think so. I mean, there's a couple of states that have done it independently, or have both parties part of the process, but I think maybe only two states out of 50 even do that.
It's interesting, you know, a couple of years ago about a proposal, I mean, maybe it was part of the batch that were voted down, asked for a constitutional convention, and because every 16 years the voters of Michigan get a chance to say, yes, we want to reevaluate our constitution, maybe some major changes, like, for example, maybe the income tax should be graduated. Yeah. Not, I'm just saying that's one thing they could look at and maybe make a change. But it was voted down, and I know I remember the Free Press was against that. And now Stephen Henderson of the Free Press is saying, I think maybe we should have voted for it. I think maybe we should have it. We need some major changes here in the state. So, I mean, that's one way to do it, but we have to wait, I think, another 14 years.
Right. Yeah. I mean, after the fact, it's a lot easier to say, you know, what we should have done, but we just didn't do enough outreach on that particular subject, because I think people would have realized if we open up, people are afraid to open up the Constitution because they're afraid of what we throw in there that they might not like. But I think it's a good exercise to do every 16 years.
And I know some people say, well, if the Democrats, if they were in majority when that time came, they would have gerrymandered for themselves. And I know that's probably what would happen. But people like Jocelyn Benson, who is the dean of the law school at Wayne State University and ran for Secretary of State as a Democrat a couple of years ago, almost won that, too. She came out better than our candidate for governor, by the way, percentage-wise. But she has proposals, and she's been working on for years with various groups that would more or less make the redistricting process much more fair in terms of geographic areas. And, of course, it has to be balanced so that you have the same number of people. But it wouldn't necessarily favor Democrats or Republicans. If a majority of people across the state of Michigan are usually Democrats in their vote, then, yeah, I mean, a fair redistricting would actually have that outcome, and that seems to be Democratic. So I think that's what's needed, and that's what Stephen Henderson, I think, was getting at, that the sort of an independent, if that's ever possible, independent commission to do redistricting that wouldn't necessarily favor one party over the other, but would make natural geographical and population concentration decisions, then we might get back to more of a democracy. Otherwise, and I think some countries do this, other places in the world, that representatives are elected statewide.
I was going to say that. A lot of countries do it that way, but how would you know?
Well, then the parties would figure out which people would be those representatives or something. I think England does it that way. I'm not sure.
Oh, really?
But in terms of the individual representations to Parliament, well, that's the big changes, and we need a constitution convention for that. So that can't be triggered by a petition, can it?
No.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're back to square one. Yeah. Well, we're coming to the end of the hour. George Duraney, Representative 15th District here in Dearborn, we really thank you so much for being on the Journal today. One last question, and it's a little bit of a trick question here. It's one of those gotcha things, but I know you're not Sarah Palin, so you won't have a bad response. It's your last term. You're term limited.
Yes.
So we can't do anything about term limits either. You're stuck with...
They always talk about bringing up different bills and changing it to make it... Well, the last one that I saw was changing it from 6 years in the House and 8 years in the Senate to 16 years, and you can serve 16 years wherever you want, which would be better, but it still would be term limited.
I mean, I've told you this before, Gary Warnchuk, who did 6 years as a representative in Dearborn some years back before he got on the county commission, he said, after 6 years, I'm just getting the hang of how to do this. In the first couple of years, I just had to do what my handlers told me, which is the Republican Party at the time, was Republican then, and the lobbyists. Have you felt undue pressure? You're pretty much your own man, I know, George, but... It's kind of tough. I mean, if you want to get reelected, you've got to sort of follow the party line. But then there's a lot of lobbyists that come in all the time.
Right. I always go back to the quote that I read in Kennedy's Profiles in Courage. And he said there's three ways you got to think about when you're voting. You either have to vote with your constituents, you have to vote with your caucus, or with your conscience. And he said, if you chose your conscience, you'd be right 99% of the time. And so that's what I've tried to agree with or to live by. If I can sleep at night and I think I'm doing the best for my constituents, then that's the way I vote.
Have you gotten a big offer yet from a lobbyist group to be their spokesperson?
No, not yet.
You haven't gotten enough friends in those certain groups, but there's still time. Do you feel like going crazy and doing what you really want to do for the last year and a half?
Yeah, I think so. I think
we're kidding here. We're kidding, folks. George is not a crazy person, really.
Lose any second now. No. I mean, I'm going to stick with basically what my party and my constituents feel is necessary. I listen to them. We have the constituent hours, as you say. We get calls and letters and emails all the time from folks, and you can't sway from that, because that's who elected you to do your job the way that they feel that you should be doing your job. So I'm not going to get too crazy in the last year and a half.
And you're not going to state what you're going to do next. Are you thinking of running for president?
That's not in the equation yet, but there's other opportunities. You know, Gary's not going to be Wayne County Commissioner forever. So we'll see what happens if the Senate seat opens up for me 2 years after I'm gone. There may be some things here locally. If some local officials decide not to run for certain offices in 17. You know, I'm done in 16, and the elections here in Dearborn are in 17. So we'll see what happens.
Well, we'll keep in touch, but good luck. It's a tough going, Lansing, getting everybody to work together on problems that the majority of people in the state really know need to be solved. And you know, because it's so political, the Democrats don't seem to get listened to much, but I know you'll do the best you can. So thank you for being on the Journal today. It has been good weather. Had a little technical difficulties at the beginning. My apologies. But we do appreciate your speaking to our listeners. And, of course, this show is podcast, so people can catch this anytime they want to from now on from WHFR.FM. So thank you very much, George. Before we end here today, folks, I've got to do that late-breaking news, and I know you stayed tuned for the whole hour just for this information. I know the people that are going to be at Dearborn Homecoming performing the entertainment. Okay, here we go. Saturday night, this is a big question. Saturday night, August 8th, the Spinners. The Detroit Motown group, the Spinners, with all their hits, they're going to be there on Saturday night. Friday night, Bugs Bedow and his band. Now, Bugs is known for a great rock and blues band in Detroit. He's got a really together group, usually six or seven people, and he's going to be the Friday night entertainment. And something really different for Dearborn Homecoming, but I don't know why they didn't think of it before. The Dearborn Symphony Orchestra is going to do a Pops concert on Sunday night. Now, just in case the people are not into that that orchestra type stuff, they shouldn't be afraid, because there's going to be a 70s, 80s, 90s rock band right before them to warm up the audience for the orchestra. But we just got the press release today. Of course, the pressing guys spelled orchestra wrong, but it's got two R's in it, folks. Okay. But nonetheless, that's going to be an exciting time. I'm sure we'll probably see you around there too, George. Yeah, always shaking hands and talking to the public, right? Okay. Thanks for today. That's all for the Dearborn Journal for today. Today is the 26th of June, 2015. Thank you for listening. And Joanne Kurczynska's show will be up as soon as she takes the chair over there. And thank you for listening. Probably get a little big band music and more until Joanne gets in place. But thank you very much to all the people here at the Farmers and Artisans Market, all the people we interviewed from the chamber, and, of course, Representative Duraney, who just finished the interview with us today. So goodbye for now, Joe. It's back to you.
Thank you, Jay. And this is WHFR Dearborn, and we'll get ready for the Highway 61.
that